program that we have before we go on to the Q&A. Last opportunity to come forward, inshallah, serve as the next involvement of the Dao committee. It's also for staff, inshallah, and some of our own agenda. Also very actively involved in the resolving of disputes. One of them is the inheritance dispute. So some of the common mistakes that people generally do make in the world of inshallah, to settle matters.
السلام عليكم ورحمة الله وبركاته. بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم، نحمده ونصلي على رسوله الكريم، أما بعد. I just wish to highlight two issues. I think the first of we start off with the word itself. Very often it's quite enticing. The bank manager will come up to us and say that we'll offer you free estate planning, we'll drop you well for you free of charge. We'll even put in a clause, insert a clause in which we should have compliance. And we'll be free of charge. But we don't realize that the bank manager appoints the bank or the bank manager or some department in the bank as executives to the estate. So they make at the end much more out of your estate than what the legal practitioner would charge you drawing up the will. And when very often what happens when we go to people or legal practitioners that are not well versed in the science of Islamic inheritance. What they do, they would ask you, how would you like your will to be or your estate to be distributed? And then a person would say, I would like my wife to receive this particular house, my daughter to inherit this car, my son to inherit my holiday flat in Durban, and the residue of my estate will be distributed in accordance with the Islamic laws of inheritance. So, according to what Ustaz had mentioned earlier, this is in conflict with the laws of inheritance because an heir does not, you cannot bequeath to an heir anything over and above his share is defined by the Sharia. So you cannot assign a particular asset to a particular heir or a portion over and above what they are entitled to. And this very often happens when people would decide on their properties, their houses, their cars, their businesses. And then as a bride, right at the end, they would say the residue of my estate is distributed in terms of the Islamic law of inheritance. But very often there's not much left to be distributed at the end. So we need to be very particular who we go to seek advice and assistance in drawing up our wills. With regard to another important thing that we see often is sometimes people feel that when the daughter got married, the father has given a certain amount of jewelry, the father had bought a trousseau, bought a house, put it on her, husband wasn't well off, so he secured her. And the feeling is that the father has already given her an inheritance in his lifetime. And in Islam, there's no concept like giving out inheritance in a person's lifetime. Anything that's given as when a person is alive is regarded and testified as a gift. There's no inheritance in a person's life. And sometimes the father says that I will give you the house, but you must gain less from the estate when I die. The son does that in good faith to the rest of the one child does that in good faith to the rest of his siblings, and then all the remaining heirs, whether they might be not necessarily only the siblings, and that's up to him if he gives up his right and his share. But he cannot be forced to give up his right, even though the father has given him something in his lifetime, because that's regarded as a gift. Now, coming to the discussion of gifts, we have mentioned that it's important if you would like to give something to our wives, to secure them, to our children, whoever they might be, that we give it to them in the form of a gift while we are alive. And it's important that we transfer, if there's a requirement for those assets to be transferred into the names of the person to whom we are making over the gift or giving the asset over to. If that is not done, then it creates huge problems. Now generally the mindset is, and sometimes people feel that in my lifetime I'll write out on a document that this house belongs to my wife, I'm giving it to her as a gift. But he doesn't want to transfer it because he's afraid of what happens if she dies before me and I'll give it back. Or I'll give it to my son that if he dies, what if I give it to my son allow the house to be transferred onto his name, because what if tomorrow he throws me out of the house? So if we are convinced, then we need to love with our conviction and then do the transfer. Because it very often happens that the remainder of the heirs will come out and say that we don't believe in this paper, we were not present, we don't know whether he just made it up, it's a forgery. If our house or that asset was from our father's name, we have a shame. So this creates problems. As Dr. Yusuf Adel said, we shouldn't keep this secret. If the father decides for some reason that he would like to give over any asset to any of the children, I think the ethical thing to do would be to call all the siblings, the wife, and the other heirs, whoever they might be, who we expect or to inherit from us, and call them together and say that this is my intention and my hope, or my intention that I'd like to give this house over to your sister who is struggling to find it difficult. So I hope you don't mind, this is my intention, I'm going to give it over. The benefit of this is the day the father passes away, there's no ill feelings. There's no, some document comes up here, and then there's no ill feelings, and our disputes arise, you are forging something, you're trying to steal our father's property, whatever it is might be. Everyone is on the same level, there's no arguing, no fighting, and things can proceed smoothly thereafter. It's also a good idea to include the wife as an executive. And the reason for this is people on the ground, in the field, legal practitioners will tell us it takes a considerable amount of time to wind up an estate. Sometimes it could be a number of years, 2 years, 3 years, 4 years. And the wife is living in difficult financial, she might be in difficult financial circumstances. She's waiting, she's finding difficult to make ends meet, the children might be young, there's huge financial pressures, and these things are not happening rapidly. She doesn't see money coming quickly. She then starts thinking that maybe someone is trying to pull me down. And then there's a strain in the relationship sometimes between her and her in-laws. So in some sense, the benefit to include her as an executive, she should be kept abreast along the way as to the progress of the winding up of the estate. So there's no ill feelings between them. Then I think, taking on from Maurice Patel at the left of, where he mentioned that the ownership needs to be defined of every asset. Now let's take a scenario, let's mention two scenarios and thereafter. In a home with both husband and wife are working, check, maybe before I come to that also, one of our offices that deals only with inheritance issues, I asked him, can you give me some advice? And he said that it's important that whoever owns something have the asset registered in that person's name. And if a person don't have an asset registered in your name, that is not yours. Because sometimes the person purchases an asset, a property, and for tax reasons, for whatever other reason, they register it in your wife's name, your son's name, and the person passes away, and actually it's not theirs. Although legally it's registered in their name, it's not theirs. So if they now want to give it back to the estate, there are legal complications in terms of donation tax, whatever else, legal practices will tell us. So that's there is a complication. And if they don't do so, they might turn around and say that this does not belong to my husband, does not belong to your father, or it does not belong to my father. It belongs to me, so this is in my name. The remainder of the heirs have no way to secure and get acquired their share in that asset. And if this creates huge problems, so whatever person owns, there are tax implications and legal implications. We need to find some ways to get around it. But it is safer for us to register whatever we own in our own names, but then to register it onto someone else's name when it is not theirs. Today, it's a huge problem with divorces where a husband will register something in the wife's name for tax reasons or whatever, and a divorce comes about, and the wife wants to say, this is my name, and the husband knows he paid for it, he worked for it, the wife did not work one day, she didn't contribute towards it. She also knows that it was only registered in her name for whatever reason, but it's registered in her name, the court is going to give it to her, and she walks away with it, and the husband is left, I am right, he cannot do anything. Coming back to those last two scenarios, I think, what I mentioned, husband and wife both working in the home, both bringing a joint income, and understanding the house means that it is ours. Things are good, the government is good, a house, a property. type of conflict in the life and the essence, it becomes a huge problem. So what is the man of the world? I feel hard to work. I feel the one that has to be the I feel the one that has to be the other problem. You know, I would pay the you would take care of the running of the whole household and I would pay all the one business. Who owns what? Are they jointly owned? What proportion of the contribution came in? So we need to define very clearly if the house, whichever way we pay, we might be doing one another a favor if the wife is paying a little extra, the husband is paying a little extra. But if we purchase a property, and if we are convinced and we have decided it should be registered jointly, and there will be two joint owners, husband and wife, 50-50, then we need to register it so and identify it to be so. Similarly, any other appliance, anything else comes into the home, the husband says, I bought this for you. It's an appliance. I bought it for you. Is it for you to use or are you the owner? So we need to clearly define that so that there's no misunderstandings going on. And the other scenario is with generally the family business with huge amounts of dispute arise. You have a family business, the father's in the business, sometimes the mother's also in the business, and they've taken the business to a certain level, maybe the first son comes out of school and straight into the business, and the business grows, the second son not interested in the business, goes to pursue the career, daughter comes, gets married, moves on, and it's our business. So the son, mother and father, digging, drawing, staking, whatever we need, it's ours, whatever we need, I want to go on holiday, here's the money for me. I want to go, there's no salary, there's no clear distinction of the role of the father, of the son, the role of the wife. You want to buy another car, here's the money going by the car. You want to buy, you want to do whatever you want to go for Hajj, here's the money to go for Hajj. Now the father passes away. And everyone comes and sits around the table and they say, what's left, what's estate worth? And the entire business is registered in the father's name, the son worked there maybe 50 years, the mother 40 years. And now they didn't take any salary, nothing is registered in their name, none of the assets, not the business, not the properties, not the house, not the cars, everything in the father's name. And now all the other siblings in the other estate agree, have an equal share. The other brother will tell the brother, I have an equal share in doing this. And now the brother keeps 50 years, I worked the business for a certain level, I brought it up, I worked so hard, and now I have to divide this equally. My sister will get half plus obviously, but what about all my effort? I didn't take a salary, there's not a single car on my name, not a single property on my name, what do I do? So it's very important that if anyone comes into the business, they need to be clear, distinct, understandings, is the son coming in as an employee or is he coming in as a partner? If he's coming in as a partner, then we need to go through the legal channels, the intimate partner, define what ownership, what percentage of the partnership he is involved in, the wife similar to her, if he's not, he's an employee, then we need to remunerate him in terms of market value, what is his, we need to give him a salary, because then he will know that I don't have any share in this, I'm working this business for a salary, if my father closes his eyes, then I receive my due for working here, if I want to, I can go and pursue something else, but as long as I'm working here, I'm just an employee and nothing more than that. So no complications, misunderstandings arise. We need to clearly define our roles and what we own and our position in the business, and that would hopefully do away with many much conflict and dispute that arises at the time people pass away. It's very sad that a father or close dear family relative has just left this world. And it should be a uniting force, it should be a means of bringing the family together. But in so many instances, it becomes a means of drifting and causing the family to disunite and fragment to the point where for years sometimes you don't see eye to eye. We'll end